Morning, everybody. It's Deej. Nah, I'm fucking with you. I'm fucking with you.
I was like, damn. I was the morning show?
Nah, I'm fucking with you. Envy didn't really like when I did that last time, by the way. Welcome to Effective Immediately. I'm DJ Head.
What up, bro? It's your favorite homegirl, Gina Views.
All right. Now, we have a guest in the studio. It's no stranger to myself, but a stranger to you because no one recognizes his Republican right-wing ways.
Big conservative energy.
Big conservative. My
Let me
brother.
Stop playing because everybody, there's somebody to hear that. See, that one little clip will be free. Right. That one little clip will be on Reddit.
Right.
Big conservative energy.
Big Trump supporter. Charlamagne the God, my brother. Welcome to the show.
Head, what's happening? Gina Views, what's happening?
Thank you
what's
for coming on the show.
I'm happy to be here, my brother.
I appreciate you pulling up on your book tour. You did LA. I want to say, I mean, I'm going to say it publicly, mm-hmm. but I said it to you privately, but I just finished the book this past week. A couple of things I want to talk about in the book, but congratulations.
Thank you, brother.
I actually think this is your second best book.
Okay.
I mean, Black Privilege was like, you know how like the debut album, people always give you credit because they feel like, people say you spend your whole life working on your debut mm-hmm. album, and then the sophomore album is always the not as good one because now you're rich running around mm-hmm. and stuff mm-hmm. like that. I think all three books are different. Mm-hmm. The reason why I think this is your second best book is because Black Privilege changed my perspective on books that I don't want to call it a self-help book, mm-hmm. but it changed my perspective on the approach to doing self-help because it's more like the different chapters, put the weed in the bag, and this I'm talking about the first book, Black Privilege, but
I'm talking our language,
right?
Yeah It's like Robert Greene and Malcolm Gladwell, Ryan Holiday. I love all of those books, but you know, they just smarter than me, so they got mad historical context for, you know, things that they talk about. With me, it's I'm using bits of my life, and I'm talking, you know, I'm using language that we understand, but I'm also talking about culture, yeah. A culture that we understand.
Is that a form of code switching?
What you mean?
Like code switching as far as translating, knowing your audience, knowing who you're speaking to, like mm-hmm. you pretty consistent. Like I try to be consistent, no matter if I'm speaking to on a platform on CNN or if I'm speaking to a high school mm-hmm. in the hood, I feel like I'm trying to always use the same language.
Yeah, I mean, I only know how to be me. Like, I can't be anything else, so I can't approach. Why are you looking at me so mean, Gina?
That's damn. That's just her look.
God damn.
That's just her look.
That's what the fuck,
she
Gina
just looked like that. She's a Leo.
Oh, the little lion.
I get serious when the cameras come on.
Word. I'm like, we was just in here laughing, joking. Now she's sizing me up like she's about to swing on me.
I code switch.
But no, I don't think it's a matter of code switching. That's just my language. That's how I talk. You know, that's how I speak. Like, you know, there's certain references I'm going to use, you know, to describe things that I know we're going to get. And I honestly don't care if other people don't get them. Because it's for us.
They're not in the group chat.
Like, right. You know, I did the Daily Show this week. And you know, I'm using not like us references in the monologue I did. I don't know if that audience gonna get it.
No.
But I don't care.
It's like a Marvel Easter egg.
But they got it though. Yeah. Like to my surprise, I was like, oh shit. I was like, Trump got a weird case. Why is he around? Yeah. They laughed like, oh. So I mean, you know, I think that our language and our culture is way more universal than we might even realize.
The reason I say that is because this is the second favorite for me personally, is because I feel like you took the first two, you learned a lot of shit, and this is the culmination of you learning those things.
Absolutely.
Like we Marvel nerds, so you got Kevin Feige, he do the whole franchise, and then he learned everything, and then they did the Avengers. And that's it's right. Like, oh, this is what it's supposed to look like, right? So one thing is the chapters. Hella chapters. Chapters are hella short.
Yes, sir.
And that was intentional.
Yes, sir.
And that's part of the reason why I feel like this is your second best book, but then the main reason is because you were so transparent about everything. Like, even shit that we've talked about, like, in the group chat or behind closed doors, like, is in the book. And I'm like, oh, okay. So you go in there with it.
One of them is from our group chat.
I know. I know.
One of them is actually from exactly. our group chat. I just didn't want to say our homie name just because
He wears glasses.
I just didn't know how. I don't know if it was incriminating or not. You know, I didn't want to say nothing. So, but it was a good conversation.
Yeah.
You know, the conversation we was having, I thought was good enough, and it impacted me enough. You know, fun to write about it in the book.
Yeah.
You know.
And then the other thing that I took away from, just like I said, it was. I think I texted you. I said it was inspiring, and it's inspiring for me as a Black man because I always get texts from women. I'm not women. Mothers of women that I've dealt with, mm-hmm. it's like, man, you was really good for my daughter and like all these kind of things, right? And then your relationship with your pops like being, you were vulnerable in the first book, but this was like another level of vulnerability, mm-hmm. right? Was it
Father Time?
Father Time.
That chapter's named after the Kendrick song.
Right.
Yeah.
So can you kind of like expound on that? Me and Gina had a private conversation about her and her family and stuff like that, but can you kind of give people that perspective as far as sharing a piece of yourself that otherwise you bury?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think a lot of times when we have conversations about daddy issues, it's always regulated to just women. And men probably have, I don't want to say bigger, because I don't like to get into the comparing Olympics, you know, who got
struggles.
It worse, the
Strayer. Yeah.
But it's just like, men be having issues with their fathers too, because that's your first superhero. You know, that's the person that you look up to and you probably look just like. And that's the Superman, you know, in your house. And for me, my dad dealt with a lot of his own issues that I didn't know he was even dealing with back then, right? The substance abuse, you know, his own mental health issues. And so a lot of ways that he was raising me out of fear and not love.
Damn.
And so I one of my first breakthroughs that I talk about in the book, in therapy, was realizing that he used to discipline me for things that he never taught me. And Damn. So that complicated it complicated our relationship, but I didn't realize that at the time. It was just one of those things where I kind of just like distanced myself in a way. And then, you know, with infidelity, approaching him about cheating on my mom, and you know him telling me, you only got one girlfriend, like literally.
Yeah.
Now, oh, you only got one girlfriend. One day you gonna understand, and that fucked me up. Right, I can curse, right?
Yeah,
that fucked me up because I'm like a young man, like damn, I'm supposed to have more than one girlfriend. And by the way, I'm cool with having one girlfriend. I've never been like the type that I don't need to be the player Rolodex full of chicks. Like that's too stressful for me and my anxiety too bad to be, you know, dealing with all of them different women. I'm not with that. So having one woman is perfectly okay with me. Me and my wife have been together for 26 years. So when he told me that, it kind of messed me up. So I went through this phase where in order to impress him, I thought I had to have all of these, you know, different women. And that phase, you know, lasted for a while. Not blaming that entirely on him, because a lot of it is just, you know, wounded ego. And, you know, you're trying to, I guess, prove something to yourself. I don't want to say make up for lost time, but, you know, you never been this version of yourself. When I was wilding in that moment, like 2015, 2014, 15, I wasn't, that man, knock it off.
Yeah, wilding is crazy. Yeah. Define wilding.
I wasn't that version of myself, you know. I had never been that version of myself before. I never had been that version of Charlamagne. I remember sitting down with a super OG legendary guy in the game, who I'm not going to say his name, but I remember him telling me every superhero going to test their superpowers.
Facts.
He was like, when you get new superpowers, you gonna test them. When you learn to fly, you gonna, you know how you seen those superhero movies when in the comic books when they first get their powers, they running in the buildings and they Spider-Man trying to learn how to swing and all. Like that's how I was when I guess I became, you know, like popular from radio, I guess.
Did your life experiences in any way make you understand your father more?
Absolutely. 100%. Especially when I started going to therapy, and then I wrote my second book, Shook One, Anxiety Playing Tricks on Me, and my father read it. And then my father, I had a younger cousin. He was like 24, 25. He completed suicide. And he had tried to complete suicide four times in his life. But he used to work with my dad, because my dad, you know, does like construction jobs. So he would go out on, you know, construction sites with my pops. So when he killed himself and my dad read my second book, my dad literally called me. And that's when my dad told me that he was going to therapy two and three times a week throughout his life. He was on 10 to 12 different medications for his mental health. He tried to commit suicide, you know, back in the day. And when he told me all of that, I remember reaching out to my mom and asking my mom, like, yo, you know dad was going through all that? And she was like, I thought he was playing crazy to get a check. Mm. So he didn't even have nobody he could really talk to until he was dealing with all those issues. But when he told me that, it allowed me to give him a lot of grace.
Why did you give him grace, though? Because, you know, a lot of people, like me, for example, I wrote mm-hmm. my daddy off blocking for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just certain stuff that happened that made me say, you know what, let me just reach out to him. Let's talk. Why did you decide to give him grace?
Because he didn't do nothing to me. Like, my daddy was literally just trying to be the best man he could at the time with the knowledge and the information that he had. He was literally dealing, you know, with the cards that life had dealt him. So he was dealing with his substance abuse. He was, you know, dealing with his mental health issues. He couldn't keep his dick in his pants, you know, right? And he had a lot going on. He had kids, unbeknownst to me, he had other kids outside of, you know, the five he had with my mom. So he had a lot going on. Mm-hmm. And I just understand life. I understand what life does to a person. So, you know, having that conversation with him in 2018 just allowed me to give him so much grace. And that's why I tell everybody, man, make sure you talk to your parents, because your parents had a life before they were your parents. Yeah. And when you learn about that life, you'll understand why they probably ended up treating you the way they treated you. Like Gina's dad probably don't fuck with her just because he's embarrassed that he ain't fuck with you. And so he don't want to sit down and have that painful conversation, mm-hmm. or conversations that's going to come. Like, nigga, where you been?
Right.
You know? That's all it is. So he probably just trying to avoid it altogether.
Is he still your superhero?
Yeah, in a lot of ways. That's my first superhero. Like, you know, like, that's dad at the end of the day. And, you know, I think when it comes to fathers, parents, period, you know, the baton has been passed. Mm-hmm. So me and him have had conversations about certain things that, you know, he told me he wanted to accomplish in his life. And I never even told him this. In my mind, I'm like, well, you did, because I did. Right? Like, and I just give an example.
The conduit to his success?
No, I'm the continuation of a journey to success that he started. Mm.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm the continuation, because he had a dream. I remember he literally told me this one time. He said, "Man, all I want to do is make $1 million." He told me that.
Yeah.
He was like, "All I want to do," he said, "all I want to do is make $1 million." He literally said that to me one time, because, you know, he does construction, so he want to, you know, buy houses, renovate houses, flip houses. He just want to make $1 million. And I mean, yo, if your child does that, you in my mind, you
it's
did
your
that.
Legacy.
That's your legacy. Right. Yeah, that's your legacy. So, you know, I forgot what you asked me, Gina.
I forgot too. You was cooking up.
Yeah, I forgot. I feel like we got where we needed to go, but I forgot what you asked me.
Yeah.
You said, is he still your superhero?
Is he still my superhero? Yeah. Yes, he's still my superhero. I have no reason for him not to be my superhero. He's my superhero because he's still here, because he's still alive, because he, you know, overcame a lot of, you know, hardships in his life. And, you know, he did well. He, for the most part, he did well with us.
When it comes to heroes, right, me and Gina was talking about this shit, like, recently, as far as I'm cool on meeting people now, like meeting my heroes at this point, because it's like certain people just disappoint you in a certain way, and you realize everybody's human, everybody has flaws, everybody make mistakes. Where are you at with it now at this point? Because I know you always looked up to, like, you know, Robert Greene, or like other people that you, Aaron Magruder, like, I know, like, these are big inspirations for mm-hmm. you. Do you still look to these people, like, for as that you look up to them, even though where you are?
Hell yeah, even more now. Like, you know, somebody like Aaron Magruder, me and Aaron Magruder.
He's in the book too,
He's in the book in the Death of a Nation chapter. You know, me and Aaron talk all the time, like literally talk all the time. And, you know, we got a lot of different things that, you know, we're working on. And he's just one of the most brilliant political minds, you know, out here. Like, I know that sounds crazy when you like that the creator of the Boondocks and Black Jesus is one of the greatest political minds. Yes, he is. And you should read the chapter Death of a Nation. Robert Greene, that's another one. Robert Greene, me and Robert Greene have a relationship. You know, Ryan Holiday. Ryan was Robert's intern, apprentice. You
know? For real?
Oh yeah, Ryan helped Robert write all of those books that we love, damn near. Right?
But, so is the same rules apply in literature as it does in hip hop, where ghostwriting is frowned upon?
I mean, it's not ghostwriting. Like, for example, I write. Like, I did Bill Maher last night, and Bill Maher was like, you know, you're a very wonderful writer. Like, do you write all this shit? And I was like, no. Right? But I was joking in a way, but I do write, meaning that I write. And then me and Chris Moreau, I send stuff that I write to Chris Moreau, and he turns it into a book. The way I write don't sound like a book. The way I write is just my thoughts, my ideas, my stories.
You write in bullet points, or like, what do you?
No, I write. I'll write out full stories. It's so funny because I got somebody that's working on a book for my imprint right now, and I literally sent them what my writing looks like before I give it to Chris, right? And it's literally, it's Chris just adds garnish, so to speak. It's not even seasoned.
An example of that? Cause
it's like what you do for me.
What do you mean?
What does Head do for you?
I'll come up with like an idea that's surface level, and then he'll just blow it up to a level that I never even imagined it going.
True. My mine is a little bit more than that. I give it to Chris so detailed, so storied. I know exactly the lesson I'm trying to tell, and he just makes it a book. Mm-hmm. Like if I had to use an example, I guess mine would look more like a blog post or an Instagram caption. He makes it an actual book. I know my chapters. I know what my chapters are going to be. I know exactly what story I'm trying to tell within all my chapters. I actually write. Like, I'm not sitting down. Like, a lot of people, when they do books, they do a series of interviews, which is cool, too. They do a series of interviews, and then that person
they write the book.
Transcribes it from those interviews. I don't do that. I actually write and then give it to
He like
to
my AI. Man. He's I cheated like, my way through
there
college.
You go. There you go.
So I would write out my essays of what I wanted it to say, and then I'll use his website, and then it's like...
What website?
Can they take my degree?
No, Gina. Crazy-ass girl.
What the fuck are you talking about?
I gotta make sure there's no refund on that motherfucker.
No, that's yours.
That's a website for real?
Yeah. Paraphrasing tool.
Oh, that was AI before AI. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Plagiarist.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you a plagiarizer too at that point.
No, I write.
But you didn't write every word.
Is that not
ghostwriting?
No, I think in the book world it's different because I literally write. Like, I'll give you an example of something that he might add. He might add historical context to something. Meaning if I say I was born in Mount's Corner, South Carolina, he's going to go get when it was estimated. You know, he'll be like, Mount's Corner, South Carolina was estimated in 1800, whatever. It was owned by this settler. Like, he's just going to go get those extra details.
He had the razzle-dazzle on it. Yeah. The hot sauce on that motherfucker.
Yeah, that's all. He's going to go get the details. And his structure. Structure is more so what he provides more than anything.
Structure.
Have you ever got an essay prompt? And then you'll be like, I can answer this in one sentence.
Yeah.
So what the teacher wants you to do is break down the full prompt. That's what he's doing.
I get it. I understand that part. But I'm just saying, like, to me, that's the same thing. I just don't understand, like, that why it's different in the book world than it is. Because I was having this conversation with the homie,
right? Because authors ain't gangsters?
And no, but I was having a conversation in hip-hop versus R&B. R&B is a collaborative thing. And we're used to that. That's a normal thing, right? But then in hip-hop, people are scrutinized for having writers and, like, they own Cardi and Drake and all these people. But I'm like, that's always been part of music since the beginning.
Yeah, books are a collaborative thing, man. Don't think for one second that, you know, most of your favorites aren't going in and sitting down with somebody and, you know, telling their stories in a series of interviews or maybe writing some things. But for the most part, they're collaborative things. Like, most of your great books are collaborative. Malcolm X didn't write the autobiography of Malcolm X.
Yeah.
It was with Alex Haley.
Was it?
So that's what I mean. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's with somebody. I could easily put with Chris Moreau if I wanted to, but it's like I genuinely write.
You don't want to give him credit because he's white.
Nah, Chris, my man. Chris gave me, and Chris is white and he's Jewish, really, but Chris gave me two of the most important jewels I ever got. And that was, let's see, it's 11 or 12 years ago. Like, yo, you need to write a book, which I already had planned to do, and you need to start a podcast. Mm. And I was arrogant about the podcast shit. I'm like, start a podcast? Why the fuck would I start a podcast? Like, I do morning radio. I don't podcast for people who can't get on radio.
Yeah.
You need to start a podcast. I'm telling you, blah, blah. I'm like, all right. I listened. I didn't shun him or nothing. I'm like, all right, fuck it. And that, because I started thinking about it. I've been fired 4 times. So if this platform, this podcast I create can keep me having a voice in case I get fired, cool. And so that's how me and Andrew ended up starting Brilliant Idiots, Andrew Schultz.
Yeah.
And so that was 11 years ago now. So damn, Chris gave me two pieces of advice that literally have changed my life. Because I got into the podcasting business with Loudspeaker back in the day, started Brilliant Idiots, and then I became an equity, you know, owner in Loudspeaker. So I got to see things from the business side, and all of that sparked me developing the Black Effect, you know, podcast network.
Now the Loudspeakers, shout out to Combat Jack too.
Salute to Reggie, absolutely.
Rest in peace to Combat Jack. I feel like when y'all first came through, it kind of revolutionized. Honestly, y'all gave birth to a lot of shit y'all complain about now.
Talk to me because
y'all made podcasting accessible to everybody. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, me and Chuck were doing a shout out to Chuck Dizzle. Me and Chuck were doing podcasts before it had a name. Mm-hmm. We was doing podcasts homegrown, in 2000, absolutely. Homegrown Radio in 2008, right? But when y'all started doing it, there's like characters and different people, and like the producer would chime in, and like you would just hear all of these people, and then it became more of a, I don't want to say a radio show, but it became active. Like it reminded me of the morning show, like like John London and House Party type vibes, right? So when I'm listening to it, people were like, oh, I could do that, because they didn't look at Reggie as a professional broadcaster. Mm. They didn't look at Tack Stone as a professional broadcaster.
That's real.
So the street dudes and people who just wanted to be a part of the culture was like, oh, we can do this too.
Yeah, I can see that. I think the only difference I would say is that there was a vetting process with Loudspeaker. And what I mean by that is, like, Loudspeaker got the read, right, with Kid Fury and Crystal.
And Crystal, yeah.
I've been a fan of Kid Fury forever. Like, I remember when Kid Fury was doing YouTube videos from his room somewhere. And I just thought he was talented, you know. And I remember meeting him way back in the day at MTV and just knowing he would be dope. So to give somebody like him a podcast based off the fact that he was making so much noise on YouTube made perfect sense. I don't know how Crystal got into the mix, but either way, it worked, and she's dope too. So, mm-hmm. you know, there was still some type of vetting process, meaning that Kid Fury still had to do something before he launched the podcast. He already had a name because of the YouTube. And then it's like Combat Jack was an entertainment attorney.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying.
So he had a certain skill set, right? And then also when he started doing the show started to grow. It was him and Just Blaze. It was people who actually had something to say that brings something to the table. Dallas Penn, God bless, A. King, all of them. And so when I came into the picture, I'm a seasoned radio personality. I'm bringing on a up-and-coming comic named Andrew Schultz. But also Andrew was doing stand-up, but he was on MTV2 and Guy Code and all that stuff. So he had a name. So it was like there was a certain vetting process that went with Loudspeaker. Like Tack Stone, I was watching Tack Stone on Twitter forever.
Yeah.
And then one day I was just like, yo, won't you come do the podcast? Come do Brilliant Idiots. He came and did Brilliant Idiots for like 2 hours and some change, killed it. So you can hear it like, oh, he should do a podcast. So there's a vetting There was a vetting process with Loudspeaker. Ain't no vetting process now. Everybody's just doing shit.
It's a circus.
That's right.
So you're saying we shouldn't encourage people to get into the space?
No. We shouldn't encourage people. We should encourage people who we think could be dope in the space to get into the space. I'm not just telling people to start a podcast. Like, I talk about it in the book, but just in life, like, you got to ask people, what's their why?
Yeah, I do that too.
You know what I mean? I got a chapter called Astronaut Kids with my man Elliot Connie. You know, he's an amazing psychotherapist, and he's got a chapter in his book. You know, it's a chapter in the book called Astronaut Kids, and it's like when a kid comes to you and a kid says they want to do something. In this case, they come to you and they say, I want to be an astronaut. You know, you say to the kid, how are we going to make that happen? You know what I mean? Like, you know, you try to put some water on those seeds. You want to fertilize those seeds to make those seeds grow. But when an adult comes to you, right, like some 30-year-old, damn near 40-year-old person, and they're like, I want to rap, or I want to start a podcast, you got to say why.
If you don't, you're doing a disservice to the community.
Absolutely. Why? Why? What's your intention? Oh, I want to make money. Well, you don't need to start it then. I just want my voice to be heard. Heard about what? Like, what are you bringing to the marketplace? What story are you telling that people just need to hear? Like, but and I think there's nothing wrong with asking those questions, why. I'm not going to encourage you. I need to know why before I encourage you. What's your why? What's your reason? Mm-hmm.
Do you want to know why the show is called Effective Immediately?
I know because I follow you on Instagram. What is it?
Because of Gina's employment status and then myself also. Which, when I left iHeart, mm-hmm. and then she left her
no,
previous.
No, I got fired.
Well, you I got technically fired. Got fired, too. That, according to EDD, I got fired. You know what I'm saying? I had to get that employment. So I got fired, too, because they didn't renew the contract. Mm-hmm. So that's why the show is called that. Now, when you are an advocate for people betting on themselves.
Absolutely.
You told me to do it. I've seen you tell hella other people who you talk to do it. What do you say to somebody when you I guess I'm asking for advice on telling people not to bet on themselves. Like, hey, no, you need to stay in the building because you're not gonna do what it's gonna take to make this a success on your own.
That's a great question. And the reason it's a great question because you just have to know the character makeup of people. Like, you have to know the mindset of people. Like, one of my cousins said something recently. They were talking about, you know, me and somebody else in my family, and because she knows us, she could say, no, he can't handle that.
Yeah.
He was able to go through that because he just built different.
Fact.
And I think we know that with certain people. Certain people are better off being employed. Certain people are better off being workers. Like, I've never been the type to, you know, shit on the employee, right? Like, you can't be, I'm a boss. And, you know, no disrespect to Dame Dash and all of them. I think we all should strive for ownership.
His son got his own cookies.
Yes. Yeah. I think we all should strive for ownership and all of that, but everybody ain't for that. If everybody's a boss, who gonna be the employees?
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? If everybody's the CEO, who gonna be the workers? Mm-hmm. Like, you gotta have, you know, those cooks in the kitchen if you own the kitchen, right. If you own the restaurant.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm the type of person that's like, yo, man, do what you feel comfortable doing, but you know everybody ain't built to bet on themselves. I'm not the person that can, you know, make that decision for you. I can mm-hmm. just observe what I've seen mm-hmm. and be like, I don't know, man. I think, you know, you make a good, you know, employee.
Yeah.
Like, some people, and by the way, some people don't want the risk of betting on themselves.
Yeah.
Some people don't want that risk. Like, that's a risk. Like, you go out there and you roll those dice, you know, that shit
get ugly.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
Yeah. You know?
Oh, I know.
That shit don't slap like you thought it was going to slap.
At all.
Do you think it's possible to be successful without knowing your why?
Ooh, yeah. I think it's possible to be successful without knowing your why. But the only reason I give a little hesitation on that question is because success to me, majority of success to me is equated with happiness. Mm-hmm. Like, if you are a janitor that's making $50,000 a year, and you know you got a roof over your head and food on your table, and you're happy, you know that's successful.
Mm-hmm.
He may not have a why to that, right? He may just feel like his why is because I need to keep food on the table and a roof over my head. That's a fantastic why.
Mm-hmm.
But you might be a CEO just because you decided to go to school and you got your degree and, you know, you got hired at this company and you might be making a 6-7 figure a year job, but it's no meaning to it.
Mm-hmm.
You went to school. Your why was because your parents told you to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
So you never tapped into your true purpose, your true intention, your true why. You're just doing what, you know, your parents asked you to do or what you saw work for other people. In this case, was go to school, get a degree, you know, get hired by somebody, and you might not really be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Is that success?
Mm-hmm.
Just because on paper you're making 6-7 figures a year
mm-hmm.
and you got a great job title, but you're not happy, are you really successful?
Mm-hmm.
Who's more successful in that equation? The guy making 6-7 figures a year who, you know, doesn't really know their why, they just went to school and went through the, you know, the motions, or the janitor who's making $50,000-$60,000 a year and they're happy because their why is just to put food on the table and keep a roof over their head, and they genuinely like cleaning up shit. Like they genuinely might like keeping the place tidy.
Yeah.
Like, who's more happy in that situation?
Yeah.
You know? So I think you can be I don't know if you can be successful without having a why, because I think success to me is really, really equated with happiness. If what you're doing makes you happy, you're successful.
Is there an age limit on finding your purpose?
Depends what you think your purpose is. I tell you straight up, your purpose is not to rap.
Right.
It's just not.
What?
It's not. We need more electricians. We need more
engineers.
See, but Sean Carter's purpose was not to rap. That's a great example. His purpose is to be the public servant that he is now. Rap was just a vehicle into that. And that's just a guy who had an otherworldly talent, mm-hmm. an extraordinary ability that sadly, for whatever reason, might even have an expiration date on it. Because I'ma always check for Hov.
Facts.
But there's a whole generation of people that may not check for him. And what if you're in his position, right? And I'm just speaking here. What if you're in his position where he had, what, 14 number one albums, right?
Albums, yes, but song, no.
Yes, so we had one number one, but he had 14 number one albums, so that's like the all-time record, right? What if Jay-Z decided right now, y'all want to do an album, but then he's like, for what? What's the why, though? The why is probably just because he's an artist and creatively he want to put it out. But being that he's had the success he's had, he's like, what if it don't go number one? What if people ain't fucking with it? Like, what do you do in that situation?
That's just psyching yourself out, though. That's just...
I'm with you.
So, but now what if we told Jay-Z not to rap?
You would never told Jay-Z that. He's too talented, Gina. Okay. I'm talking about these niggas that ain't got no talent. Like, you would have never told Jay-Z not to rap. He's too nice. How could you listen to... And by the way, there was people who did that. There was people
He could get a deal.
He couldn't get a deal. There was people who didn't see the vision. Mm-hmm. But then you had people like the Dame Dashes and the Big Bird who saw the vision. They decided to do it independent. And eventually, everybody caught on. But mm-hmm. he was too talented to not rap. And it works both ways, right? That's why in my first book, I have a chapter called Fuck Your Dreams, If They're Not Your Dream. Right? Because a lot of times we just do things because we see them working for other people.
Right.
But then I got a chapter in this book called The Astronaut Kids, which is telling you if somebody comes to you, especially children, and say they want to do something, well, you ask, how are we going to get it done? It's the same thing when you hear somebody with that kind of talent. When you hear somebody with that kind of talent, you might say to yourself, oh, I'm going to invest in this person. I'm going to help this person try to get to where they need to be. And sometimes that's what you need. You need that encouragement. A lot of times, a lot of people is betting on themselves because ain't nobody willing to gamble with them.
Facts.
You know?
That's a fact. That's a fact. Okay, what about Kendrick?
What about him?
His purpose at this point. I mean, rap is the vehicle. What do you think his purpose is?
I think Kendrick's...
Because I don't know if we actualize it at this point yet.
No, I see it. I'm on record saying it a million times. Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers will go down in history as one of the most important hip-hop albums of all time. Mm-hmm. And so will Jay-Z 444.
So I'm saying his purpose, though, is what?
I think his purpose is to help brothers heal. I think he's living his purpose right now. I think those conversations that he's having on his album about going to therapy, about, you know, wanting to do right by his wife, not cheat on his wife, I think those conversations about... you know, issues with his father. I think all of that is helping brothers to get started on their healing journey. Like when rappers start providing soundtracks to what people are going through, it makes it cooler. And rappers are always providing soundtracks for the bullshit.
Yeah.
So now you got guys like Jay-Z and Kendrick and the Rhapsodies and the West Side Boogies. And all. They're providing soundtracks for what people are actually going through in real life, you know, dealing with, you know, mental health issues, going to therapy. Like, all of that is happening in real time. And I think that's encouraging a whole generation of brothers to go seek healing. Like, my dad used to always try to get me to watch Minister Farrakhan speeches when I was young. Mm. But when I heard Biggie say deep like the mind of Farrakhan, I heard Chuck D say Farrakhan's a prophet, so I think you ought to listen to him.
It's the hip-hop influence.
It was the hip-hop influence that made me be like, oh. So if you're a man and, you know, your wife or somebody's encouraging you to go to therapy and you hear Kendrick rapping about it, or you hear Jay-Z rapping about it, you know, you hear, like I said, West Side Boogie rapping about it, because I thought, what was it, More Black Superheroes?
Yeah.
That was a fantastic project, right? When you hear that, you're like, oh, okay, let me go do some internal work.
I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, too, somebody's purpose can be to help you find yours. So, not to get all deep and stuff, but my sister died the day that I filmed my first ever interview.
Wow.
And she was the person who had me watching 106 in Park. She's a person who put me on Lauryn Hill and Jagged Edge and, you know, all the, like, the 90s music and things like that. And she didn't even know what I was doing. I was planning on, you know, surprising her.
What was your first interview?
It was so long ago. Was it
with No Jumper?
No, this is before.
Oh, okay. Way before that.
Way before. Okay, just when I'm like, I'm going to go buy a camera, buy microphones, and set it up in my living room.
Because I was going to tell you, your sister did not die for you to be on No Jumper. I was going to tell you that, Gina. I'm glad you cleared that up. Okay.
No, nigga.
I'm glad you cleared that up, Gina. I'm really glad you cleared that up.
But it was a vehicle.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's all I wanted to say.
But she was the person who encouraged you.
Yeah, and she died at 30.
Okay.
I'm 30 now.
Mm-hmm.
So being that she was the person who taught me, you know, she the reason why I do a lot of things that I do. But like I said, she died the day that I filmed the first ever one. And it was even throughout the day I was thinking I was seeing her and stuff. And
So hold on. She passed and then you went to film?
So she died the night that I was filming, and I didn't know what was happening until the following morning. Her boyfriend beat her to death.
Oh, man. Sorry.
So
to hear that.
That's why I thought, like, throughout the night, like, I was out with my friends after the interview, and one of my friends was drunk. She kept falling, and I promise you, I kept seeing my sister's face.
Wow.
But the fact that I started something that came from her, you know, just as a big sister.
Yeah, planting those seeds.
Have me watching Rap City, you know, things like that.
Did she have any dreams of being a host herself?
No. She was just one of those people who I feel like just never identified what it was, who she was.
Her why.
And that's why I'm saying I think maybe somebody else's purpose could be to help the next person find theirs.
I totally agree with that. That's why I say, man, you know, your true purpose in life comes in service to others. Mm-hmm. Like, you gotta be in service to other people, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, she poured into you,
right?
And that's our duty now. Like, our duty right now is to pour into other people. Like, hey, you gotta pour into the next generation of West Coast personalities. That's what you're doing with Gina, and then Gina, you gotta do the same. You know, mm-hmm. when your time comes, and that's literally our purpose. Like, yeah. Our purpose is to help. So when you ask me what is Kendrick's purpose, it's to help. And that's what he's doing.
I think it is to help. If we're going to Dot, I think it is to help. Except Meet the Grams. That's extremely disturbing.
Well, no, he helped. He helped Aubrey with self-reflection.
This Kendrick does not win this battle as convincingly as he does if he hadn't have done that internal work on himself.
I can see that.
It's
I can see that. Like that's a great perspective.
Everything that he did to Drake in this battle, you know, when you look at the Like That record.
He did it to himself. He had to have done it to himself.
When you look at the Like That record, that's just rap. That's just, nigga, I'm nicer than you. Y'all can't fuck with me. Y'all know I'm the boogeyman. Here I go slapping y'all again. Y'all ain't going to do shit. Right? Drake decided to reply.
He fucked up.
Oh, Kendrick's like, oh, so now you want to talk. Like, remember what I was talking about earlier with your dad?
Yeah.
And I was saying how your dad probably just avoiding you because he's scared to sit down and have that real face-to-face conversation with you because you're going to start peeling back them layers and really picking him apart and making him see himself.
Yeah.
That's why the name of my book is Get Honest or Die Lying, right? Because I say, you know, we got to stop lying to ourselves and stop volunteering those lies to other people. When somebody makes you see yourself, when you see yourself in that mirror for the first time, that shit can be scary. So Kendrick's like, oh, so now you want to talk. Well, let's talk.
Let's have a conversation.
And it start off light, right? Euphoria. It's a stern talking to. It is a stern talking to, and I'm addressing everything that I think is wrong with you. First of all, let me get my shit off. Let me tell you what I don't like about you,
facts,
personally,
right?
I hate the way you walk, hate the way you talk, hate the way you do. But more importantly is this. I don't like the way you move here. I don't like the way you move there. Cool. So now you got to sit down. You got to think about that for a second. The timestamp record was 616 in L.A. Mm-hmm. That's him. And another thing. and another thing, Aubrey. I want to, you know, you really need to watch the people around you. It's not just you. The people around you ain't shit either, you know?
Yeah.
And now you Drake, you like, nigga, you don't know me. So now you come with Family Matters.
Oh, no. Oh, wait, he responded.
No, what was before Family Matters? The AI.
Well, AI was before all of it. Yeah. I don't even count the AI.
Yeah.
But the AI, I mean, it was a good part of the battle, but that really didn't have nothing to do with nothing. The Family Matters is him just, what he messed up is he went on the defensive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
He went on the defensive just a little bit. I like Family Matters, though. I think Family Matters is a very dope record. But Family Matters set up Meet the Gram. Oh, so you want to talk about my man. You want to lie and say my man got my woman pregnant. You know, what else he said? What other egregious thing he said in that record?
He said he was an abuser.
I beat my wife. Yeah. All of this other stuff, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What did they say? Don't tell. He told him before, don't tell no lies about me. And I won't tell no truth about you.
Facts.
So now you got to sit down and really talk to your therapist.
They go to this mirror.
Oh, and I'm gonna tell you how I know Kendrick do internal work. At the end of the Meet the Grams record, he told him, "I think you need to do some ayahuasca to separate your ego from you or whatever." I've done ayahuasca. There is nothing that puts all your traumas on the table and lays it out for you more than ayahuasca.
Why the fuck would you do that?
I wanted to do it. I'll do it again. Like, you, ayahuasca, like, you really can't run from yourself. You can't run from yourself in life, period, right? All your bullshit will always catch up. But ayahuasca puts all of these things that you've been running from on the table. Like, you are forced to face them. And it's like you're chained, you know, to, like, a wall or something, and you keep trying to look away, and it's like something holding your eyes open, like, no, you're going to see this. Mm-hmm. You're going to see this. You're going to observe it. And you're going to deal with it. And that's what I think he did on Meet the Grams. And I don't know if everything on Meet the Grams was true, right? I don't know. But a large part of it was just the self-reflection.
I mean, he told me everything was facts. So
I mean, I don't know.
But to me, that again, yes, I agree with you. He's mm-hmm. done a lot of work. Even me knowing him for as long as I've known him, I could tell he's different as a man, right? But I noticed that through a lot of the homies where – oh, I could tell you're seeing the therapist, or I could tell you doing internal work on yourself. I could tell you a different person than you used to be, because you would respond to these stimulus different than you responding now. But even you, like, I noticed that about you. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You, well, brilliant is another thing, but normal you would react certain. I noticed something that just recently happened, and it don't really bother you no more.
Tell me.
Like, you'll have little tiffs with other people, right?
Who I have one with? Tell me. I don't know. I'll be forgetting. I really be forgetting.
What's wrong with this nigga? You'll have tiffs with certain people, and I remember, like, when certain things would happen, it would bother you to the point where you would even speak about it, like, amongst ourselves. You don't even speak about that shit no more. You'd be like, yo, I'm in the backyard hugging a tree. I'm like, the fuck are you talking about?
Because honestly, man, I don't want to hurt nobody. And what I mean by that is, when they go low, I'm gonna go to hell.
Right.
And I know that. Like, and it's different now because of, like we talk about with Kendrick, the internal work. I can see what's wrong with you. I know that 90%, 95% of what you're saying about me has nothing to do with me. It's how you feel about yourself.
Projecting.
That's your own insecurities that you're projecting onto me. Mm-hmm. And that don't work with a person like me. Like, I could really sit you down and have a conversation with you about yourself, because I've been there before. Like, even when you talk about, like, a lot of I don't even know if you can use the term shock jock anymore, because everybody's just saying shock and wild shit now. That shit don't even matter, right? But it's like, I can tell, for you to be in that space to say anything you want about anybody whenever you want, however you want, all reckless. One, you never been punched in the face before.
Facts.
Right? One, you never been punched in the face before. And number two, you're just a hurt person.
You know, Wayno called me one day. He called me one day. He said, you know what, Head? I've been looking at things you've been saying, and I've been looking at shit that's going on. He said, I'm no longer talking to niggas who ain't never been punched in the mouth.
That's a fact.
And I was like, and I sat there for a second inside. He was like, you there? I'm like, that's a great perspective. I never thought about it like that.
That's a fact. If you've never been punched
in
the face.
I've been punched in the face before.
Exactly. So have I, for things that I've said.
Right.
So when you get punched in the face, right, I've been, you saw on camera, you can go look up my shit on YouTube. I've been punched in the face. I didn't had to get in fights across from the radio station. When shit like that happens and you still, like, fuck that, I'm going to still say what I want to say. Now I respect you. Mm-hmm. If you're a personality that can sit across from somebody and say exactly what you've been saying about them to them,
yeah,
I respect you. I don't have a lot of respect for this era of shit. And it's not even about age. It's just this era of shit. Because y'all ain't never been punched in the face. You ain't never looked at somebody and said exactly what you was feeling. And I know you just hurt and projecting a whole bunch of hurt onto other people. That's the only reason you're able to talk like that. The only reason, when I was talking really crazy about people, I was a hurt motherfucker.
Yeah.
You can only do that when you're a hurt person.
Mm-hmm. Did Genie, you ever been punched in the face?
I'll do the punching.
A couple more things. Comedy trauma. Dealing with our traumas with comedic. I noticed that early, and it was part of your book. But I resonated with that, because that's literally how my family get in. Like, if I take you right now to my family, mm-hmm, they be like, who is this big head, big nose motherfucker? You know, that's grandma. Rest in peace, my grandma. My grandma was the worst. But I noticed that I started to do that to other people.
Word.
And they weren't raised how we were raised. And so now, like, when I'm clowning on people and shit, they taking it personal because they were raised on hugs and kisses, and I was raised on comedic relief. And I don't necessarily know, can you give tips on people? Is that a black thing, first of all? Is that just black people?
Maybe. You know, I don't it's think it's culture. No, it's not just black people, because it's like what we was talking about earlier. You gotta know people, right? Like, I met Gina last night for the first time, and I know a million Ginas. Not saying you're an original Gina, but I know you from the hood. I'm from that. Regardless whether you from South Carolina or Cali, if you from a certain environment, you know how that person get out. You know how that person was raised. So when she said that about her sister, I know I can make that joke.
Yeah.
Facts.
We gonna laugh.
Right.
And my sister would have made that joke.
That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I can't say it's just a black thing, because I know Andrew Schultz is like that.
Yeah.
I got a bunch of white homies that are like that. That's true. We like to laugh. We like to joke. Once that is on the table, because you know I'm not saying it in malice. I'm saying it because, damn, shit done got dark a little bit. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Motherfuckers' butt cheeks is in here clenched together. Like, damn. Like, oh, man. Dude, I'm sorry. Because I am really sorry to hear that. Like, I'm sorry that your sister passed, but it's just like, we can't stay on that. Like,
gotta pivot out that energy.
But it also makes heavy conversations easier to carry.
Right.
It don't make them lighter. I think we use that word lighter. There's no such thing as making something heavy lighter. I just think that certain things make heavy conversations easier to carry. And I think humor is that thing.
Do you have that same energy when you have your conversation with your wife about infidelity and stuff like that? Like, how do you, because I don't, you know me, I'm way too honest. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why I'm single. Mm-hmm. I just tell girls the truth. Mm-hmm. And so it backfires every time. And so I try to throw some humor in there, and they think I'm fucking crazy.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's just how I deal with it.
You know what? I started to make a bad joke last night, you know, but because, you know, coming to L.A., wilding back in the day, right? So it's like, you know, and that's where a lot of my bullshit happened, right? Like, that got me caught up at home.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, I started to make a bad joke last night, but I was like, you know, let me shut the fuck up, because you never know, you know,
the trigger.
Okay. You know what I'm saying? You never know what the trigger is. And for me, it's like, I don't think your woman want to hear anything about your infidelity. Women just want to see your change behavior. You know, I don't think there's really no explanation for the action.
Is it?
I'm gonna get a joke off on a nigga.
What? what, is it, can it would.
Like, you giving that little dick to people? You out here giving,
Oh, yeah, I say that.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
You out here giving that regular ass dick to people? What?
You know I'm the nigga in the relationship. Like,
I got you. Yeah.
Nigga, you out here embarrassing me cheating with that little meat.
Now I gotta break up with you, cause she thinking, why is she with him?
I was fucking with a nigga who breath stink, and I found out everybody knew his breath stink, so I had to stop fucking with him.
God damn. Instead of just paying for his root canal, Gina.
I ain't tricking.
Damn. But no, that's what it is. Like, I just don't, I think, yeah, the best thing when it comes to stuff like that is just change behavior. I don't think she wanted him.
So there's no apologizing or none of that. It's just let me show you.
The best apology is change behavior. Cause there's really no explanation. Like, I think when it comes to infidelity, only men understand infidelity.
But I try to articulate it to women. I explain it through science, anthropology. They just don't.
Because it really does sound dumb when you break it down.
It sounds really smart.
It sounds like an excuse.
Sounds like an excuse. Like, for me,
monogamy is literally going against my primal innate nature.
That sounds like an excuse.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that.
Okay.
I don't believe that.
Then you
I really
think
you're going
to say
that.
Primal and innate. That's the worst. Make a bitch forgive you. Exactly.
Like, so you a monkey now? You a big old ape? You think being an ape gonna get me? You know,
that's not what I'm saying. Like, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, there are certain reasons that things occur.
I think that sex is all energy, and I think that if you are really supposed to connect with a person, there's gonna be an emotional, mental, spiritual connection. That's undeniable. And if you really, truly have that emotional, mental, spiritual connection with one woman, like if you're really locked in and tapped in with that one woman, like it's an unbreakable energy field. So nobody else can get into that energy field, and nobody else's energy can even get into you like that. I think that's what's confusing sometimes when you, might be in a relationship and you really locked in with this person energetically. But then you start feeling somebody else's energy. But I think what we mess up as men, we always think that energy is sexual. When the reality is, no, it's not. All my greatest relationships in life are with women.
Fact, right? Mine
like,
too.
Like my whole crew, everybody around me is a bunch of women. And that's because I'm not thinking with my dick. I'm thinking with my freaking brain. And I'm actually, when I feel something, like something says, man, I want to get to know that person. A man, when a man says, I want to get to know a woman, he thinks, oh, I think I'm supposed to smash. No, look at her like you would look at a guy.
No.
You feel like you're supposed to get to know.
Wait a minute. What you say, nigga?
Man, you know what I mean, Gina. Listen to what I'm saying. Like when you meet a guy.
Hey, you was a brilliant idiot talking wild.
No,
at dicks.
As a man.
At prehistoric dicks.
That shit was crazy.
But I'm just saying.
As a man.
It was crazy back then?
No, this was like this week, 2 days ago.
Look up prehistoric dicks.
No, don't do that.
They was making dildos back in the day. But as a man, like for example, right?
Egyptian dildos is crazy.
When somebody told me back in the day, Glasses hit me up. Like, yo, my man DJ Head. Debbie, yo, DJ Head. So I feel like I need to know DJ Head, right? So that's my man. Like, that's just two people that I highly respect that I fuck with told me that about somebody else that they super fuck with. Mm-hmm. And me and Head super cool.
Yeah.
Why don't we look at women in that way, as men? Like, if somebody say, yo, you need to meet Gina Views, and then you meet Gina Views, and you why does it always have to be, damn, I want to fuck Gina Views? Like, why
it's that too?
Why can't we just be homies? Why can't we just be super cool? And that's my partner now. Like, I think men got to change the way we interact with women, and we got to change our feelings towards women. When we have feelings towards women, it don't mean that you're supposed to
it's
fucking.
It's not sexual.
That means that God might be saying that's somebody that can be your friend to help elevate your motherfucking life. And that's real.
I agree with you.
Single homegirl I got around me has helped elevate my life in some way, shape, or form.
I agree with you.
Why has it been important for you to empower black women?
I mean, honestly, it was just something that I've always done. I just started being more intentional about it because, you know, I think that's another thing. We take our sisters for granted a lot of times, you know, because black women are always there for us in spite of. Whether it's your mom, whether it's your grandma, whether it's a baby mom, whether it's a longtime girl, whatever it is, black women are always there for us in spite of. And I remember when I wrote about it in my second book, when I had an interaction with Tommy Lauren, you know, I went on her show, we had a debate back and forth, and then people at Viacom thought it would be a good idea for us to do a show. All the women in the building was like, you better not, Charlamagne. I was like, I wouldn't even think about it. I was like, that's just what the higher-ups are saying. And the higher-ups were like, well, would you at least come meet her? Because she's here to have a meeting today. And so, you know, we went up there to meet. And we had a conversation, just a conversation in the room. And when we left the room, we took a picture together. And I took the picture and I put it up on social media. And I put it in black and white. And I put, do you see color? Because she had just did Trevor Noah's show. And on Trevor Noah's show, she said she don't see color. So Trevor said, well, what do you do at a stoplight? and so I thought I was being funny. But everybody got mad at me. Oh, fuck, you know, this started going in. And so I got on Twitter and I go, yo, man, who are, and I was trying to be progressive. So I said, who are the woke women of color that we can, you know, basically amplify and make them a voice the way Tommy Lauren is, right?
To counter that energy.
Yes. Oh, my God. When I say social media lost their mind, I mean, they went crazy. I mean, Charlamagne hates black women.
Oh, for real?
It was bad. Go, you can Google that shit. Charlamagne hates black women. There's all these think pieces, you know, about me and Trevor Noah being in love with Tommy Lauren. All of this dumb shit. And all I was simply trying to say was, no, can't y'all see what is happening here? This woman has a platform, right? And because she has a platform of people who like her, they tune in. But then she'll say something that causes social media and black people to get at her. So now you're just creating this tsunami of in the algorithm, and the algorithm don't know no different.
Right.
So she's always trending. So it's just lifting up her profile. So I kept saying to myself, man, we keep amplifying these people with hate. Who are the voices that we can amplify with love, mm-hmm. right? And so when everybody attacked me, I do what I always do. All right, cool. Bet. Show you better than I can tell you.
Change behavior.
That's it. I show you better than I can tell you. So now I'm gonna be intentional. I'm gonna be intentional about, you know, empowering these sisters. I'm gonna be intentional about the voices that I was talking about on social media. Yes, they already existed, so they were right when they said that. There was a bunch of them that already existed, so it was just up to us to amplify them. And I feel like that's what I've done since then. That was like 2016, maybe 2015, 2016. So since then, that's what I've done. So to answer your question, Gina, I feel like that's something I've always done, but I've just been intentional about it, and you know, really not taking y'all for granted as black women.
Yeah, it says I hate black women because I went meeting with Tommy.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I hate black women because of a picture with Tommy. I hate all black. God damn.
My mom's.
What? Yeah. I hate black women?
Yeah.
That's, by the way, that's the wildest narrative to me that is like unbelievable when I hear it. And people always try
is that
to
the
use
wildest,
that.
Is that the wildest one about you that you know of?
It's probably the only one that it still might bother me a little bit, but not really, because it's like you can't let none of this shit bother you, man. You got to be secure with who you are. Like when I look in the mirror, I know who I am. When I wake up in the morning, I know who I am. When I go to sleep at night, I know who I am. So stuff like that don't bother me. And to your point, Gina, you wouldn't ask me that question if you didn't see it.
Yeah.
You know, like I show and prove through actions and deeds.
That's fact.
I literally asked because I've seen what you're doing with Nala and Jess. So yeah.
And those are the fairly new ones.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
the only reason I know who Tamika Mallory is because of you, Angela Rye because of you.
Yep.
Oh no. Right.
I'm not taking away from them.
Yeah, they were already doing.
I'm not taking away from them. I'm saying you've used your platform to introduce these women to me.
I didn't know who they were until I saw them on Breakfast Club.
Because I would not have otherwise seeked them out for what they do.
I didn't know
that they exist. Like I never knew what a political pundit was.
I didn't know
that existed for black people. I thought that was like, even when I told Sway this one time when I was learning about stocks, even when shout out to EYL and what, you know, Rashad and Troy is doing. Mm-hmm. I thought that was white people shit. In real life, I really thought that stocks were for white people. Mm-hmm. I really thought that was for white. I didn't know that was for us.
That's very important what you just said, because that shows me
real shit.
Why that is important. Why EYL is important. Why it's important to have those voices on Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
Because I do know that they are getting introduced to a new audience. And that's the point, right?
Facts.
And vice versa. Like, I feel like, you know, Angela Rye is somebody who's been on the Hill for so long. But, you know, I think that a lot of those voices on the Hill need to hear what's going on in the hood.
Facts.
You know? And I think that, you know, her being... And not saying she's not from that, because she got that too, but you know
she's still
from
a
Seattle,
black woman.
That's right, 206. so she got that same thing with Tamika, right? But it's good when Tamika's totally different. She's an activist. Tamika in the street. So I'm talking about those people, those political pundits like the Angela Rise and all them. It's good when we bring them and, you know, elected officials on the show, because our audience get introduced to them and they get to hear what our audience is thinking now, and so it might help them change their language and
how they
approach things.
Well,
they'd
be in an echo chamber most of the time. Like, they sitting around talking and shit. And I don't like Kamala and them doing Electric Slide on TV, and I don't like that shit, but that's just me.
Well, she's a 50-plus-year-old black woman. I'm sure she knows how to Electric Slide. She went to an HBCU.
Yeah, but I don't like when they be showing, like, I don't want to get into political shit, because that's just a whole other, but I just don't like when we become a caricature of ourselves from a white lens. To me, I don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's no different than, it's almost not blackface, but it's black culture face. I don't know if that makes sense.
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
So I just don't like that shit. But to wrap it up though, because you gotta go, to what Gina's point, you throwing assists, you made it a point to have been doing that since the beginning. Thank you for that too, by the way. Charlamagne was one of the first people that lobbied for me to get hired at iHeart. He reached out to the iHeart gods and was like, yo, make sure this is somebody you need to hire. That's a true story. He never tells it, but I tell it.
No, I mean, that came because people that I respect, you know, being a reference.
Yeah.
That's why having your name being solid is important. Like, people don't understand, like, it's not about what people say in front of you. It's about what people say behind your back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people were advocating for Head, like, yo, there's this new station coming to L.A., you know, DJ Head need to be on the radio. And when I got asked, you know, who should be on that station, just because they told me that Head was one of the names that I threw in the mix. And it was only four people. All of them got hired, too, except for one.
Right.
Yeah.
It's two quotes that I...
And all of them got hired except for one and fired. You and Letty got fired.
No, I'm the only one that walked.
You walked, which was stupid, by the way. Like, both of them should be on Real 92.3 in LA right now, okay?
Hey, bro.
Letty Martinez has the number one morning show, Brown Bag Podcast, 18 to 34. Head is out here cooking. You see Head, he got this show, The Bigger Picture, with Elliot and Jeremy. You see him with The Effective Immediately with him and Gina. Like,
oh, no, it's more to come.
It's more to come. Like, and I just didn't, I mean, there's just certain things I don't understand. You know, I don't get in the business of all, but I just like when you have, yo, great talent is so hard to come by. Like, I can look at y'all, I can look at this right now and say Head and Gina going to work. And Head and Gina going to work in a real way.
Thank you.
You know, and it's just like, yo, I would hope that, you know, especially for radio in L.A., like, you know, sometimes it's okay to be like, you know what, we fucked up. Let's spin the block.
Well,
bring Head back with Gina.
We are announcing some syndication next week.
You see what I'm saying?
So,
you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting. But two quotes, and then we get out of here. I can't fault anybody for what they don't know, but I will fault myself for not teaching them. That's something you said to me. The other thing you said to me that I wrote, these are notes from my book, because I'm gonna write my notes and then send it to Chris Morrow. Mm-hmm. But
you're gonna get a ghostwriter.
I'm gonna give me a ghostwriter.
You just said all that shit to him. Yeah. You ain't even gonna write your shit.
The other quote is, protect your name with your life, because it is your life.
That's right.
Those are two things you told me. One you told me in 2015, the other one you told me in 2020.
That's right. Protect your name with your life, because it is your life, but I am not going to try to convince you of anything. Meaning, like, if you have a narrative about me, if you got an opinion about me, and you've never tried to get to know me, fuck you. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm over, there's certain people out there that are just committed to misunderstanding you.
Yep.
And you have to know that.
Facts.
But also, I'm not going to try to convince you I'm not going to try to convince you about me if you've never taken the time to get to know me. Mm-hmm. If you've never taken the time to ever find out the truth about me in any way, shape, or form, why should I take the time to explain myself to you? Mm-hmm. Like, why? Like, I don't understand. Like, I see people reacting to sit on social media about them, and I'm like, why are you reacting to that? Why are you giving that any energy? Mm-hmm. If these people have not taken the time out of their busy schedules to try to find the truth out about you, why even try to convince them of anything? What's the point?
I don't find it. I don't try to convince. But that's also to my detriment, though. I don't try to convince anybody ever to change their mind about how they feel about me. Mm-hmm. It could be women. It could be my family members. Oh, you think I'm an asshole? Cool. Like, But I don't know if that's the correct way to behave, though.
Man, Nipsey said, don't stay safe, stay dangerous. So,
yeah, but I don't think he meant that.
Well, listen, and Tupac said, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. And Tupac said, if you ask 10 different people about me, you'll get 10 different answers. I am perfectly fine with being all of these different things to all of these different people. I am perfectly fine. Some people might think I'm smart. Some people might think I'm stupid. Some people might think I'm cool as shit. Some people might think I'm evil.
But you know yourself.
I know myself. Mm-hmm. Let it all out. Because guess what? Somebody said to me the other day, somebody asked me, they said, what's the biggest misconception about you? And I said, I don't think there is a misconception, because I don't know what version of me that person saw. Mm. I've been doing this shit for 26 years. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know what version of me you saw. I don't know what you're basing, you know, your opinion of me on to say that there's a misconception.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You might have saw one piece of content and been like, oh, I don't fuck with him. It might be totally right to feel that way. Or you might have saw something else and be like, I really like what he on, and you might be right too. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's just like, I don't care. I'm gonna constantly be me. And yes, I'm probably everything, you know, people think I am. Like, whatever narrative you have about me in your head, you're probably 100% right or 100% wrong.
Eminem said, "I am whatever you say I am."
Because you're saying it, you already believe it. If it comes out of your mouth about me, then you already believe it. Mm-hmm. And you did not take the time to even see if what you're saying is true. So I'm not explaining nothing to you. So believe what you want to believe. And I might be the boogeyman to some and a blessing to others. Either way, I don't give a fuck. Don't give a good solid fuck.
Last word.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Gina. It's been a pleasure meeting you the last couple of days, because, you know, I Head, my guy, and Head got a great eye for talent too. So when I see Head fucking with you, and I'm like, okay, I want to tap into Gina and see what she on. And just meeting you in person lets me know you super solid. So my advice for you is, don't ever change, even when these cameras turn on, mm-hmm. even when these microphones turn on. Just be yourself. Because you already, you naturally got it. All you got to do is show up.
I told her the same thing. You should have heard her radio voice.
She had a radio voice?
She had a radio voice.
No.
She was a puker. Remember the old...
Oh, my God. Gina Fuse.
Yeah.
Gina Fuse.
I took broadcasting classes.
It's your girl, Gina Fuse.
That's a radio term.
It's your girl, Gina Fuse.
Yeah.
You're listening to Effect Immediately with DJ Head and Gina Fuse.
Yeah. That's like customer service?
Nah, you got to be you. Where you from?
L.A.
What part?
South Central.
You got to be South Central.
I told her.
And you know, and you're going to grow and you're going to evolve in life. Don't be afraid to grow and evolve. But the core of you is that young lady from South Central. All you got to do is show up and be yourself. Don't be afraid to tell your story. Same way you told your story about your sister. Don't be afraid to tell your stories. Mm-hmm. You know, don't be afraid to talk about things that have happened in your life. Don't be afraid to talk about relationships. Don't be afraid to talk about what you on.
Yeah.
Because can't nobody be Gina Views at all.
Thank you.
So all you got to do is show up and keep being yourself, just like this fool, just like me.
And we get in trouble, though.
And you got to be willing to do that too. Everybody's not going to agree with you.
Yeah.
You know? And you know what's so funny? They think we contrarians, hey?
I know.
But they don't know. This is us all the time. We doing this to each other. Mm-hmm. We talk to each other. Like
he texts me inflammatory shit during the beef.
I'm just trying to ride.
They on your ass, man.
I'm like, oh, word,
what,
LA?
He said, eyeball, what you going to do?
I'm fucking with him and Glass. What's up with LA, yo? What's up? The sixth guy got y'all spooked. I'm just trying to stir shit up.
Yeah.
I already know how Kendrick coming. Well, honestly, I didn't know how he was going to come.
Yeah.
But I just knew Kung Fu Kenny was going to do something.
Right.
You know?
No, you just on Breakfast Club, just in general, like I was telling Head, my introduction is, of course, what a lot of people probably was, the Ray J Fabulous thing. Like, mm-hmm. I told you, I'm a fab head. Mm-hmm. But the way that you're so, you don't hold back with the guests. You ask exactly what ever the fuck is on your mind,
no matter if it's on the sheet or not.
Yeah,
that's right.
And I've started doing that just because of, you know, just watching you for so long. So thank you.
Just don't do it maliciously, that's all.
No,
that's it.
Do it because you're curious.
That's it, man. Thank you, my brother.
Thank you,
the Radio Hall of Famer.
That's right. Go get the new book, Get Honest or Die Lying, Why Small Talk Sucks, available everywhere you buy books now.
I get the Audible, man. Get the audio version. He reads it himself.
You didn't bring me one.
It's 6 hours listening experience, one flight coast to coast. It's DJ Head, Gina Views, Effective Immediately. My brother, Charlamagne Tha God, thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
West Coast.